point of order. Seems like every time I see George now, he mentions to me that I keep getting more and more gray hair. And like he's surprised, right? And, you know, it was interesting. I was thinking to myself as I was going through a little bit of a conflict the past few weeks. Someone mentioned to me, they asked me what I was going to do because I hadn't shaved. And then I feel like I should tell you all, Sharice told me to do it. She told me, I asked her, I said, should I just cut it all off? She said, no, let it grow. So see Sharice if you would prefer that I shave it, or if you'd like me to keep it, that's fine. See Sharice too. That's one thing you learn when you get married. What does it say? Your body is not your own. Neither is your hair. So good morning, everybody. We've been talking about having the courage of our convictions and what it means to be bold in our faith. And, you know, what I want to talk about today, it's about boldness, but it's a little bit different in that sometimes when we think of boldness, again, we have to get out of the mindset of thinking of all these big, humongous, courageous acts and remember that sometimes having courage and being willing to step out on faith and represent our God, it's the little things that count. It's those small acts of courage that really show where our faith really lies. And I want to look at a couple examples of that today. The title of the sermon is Bottom of the Ninth. This is my tribute to the World Series and the fact that, you know, I was thinking about one of my friends was telling me how that game went on for like 18 innings or something like that the other day. Leroy's like, I didn't stay up and watch it. Say you recorded it, right? But we think about when there's a time to be courageous, everybody doesn't step up. Everybody doesn't have the heart. And when you think of what does it mean to have a big heart, right? You know, what does it mean to be a big heart? Some people equate that to being somebody who's really compassionate, loving, giving, somebody who's willing to share. But sometimes having a big heart is not just a matter of giving and sharing, but sometimes it means stepping up when everybody else steps back. You know, it means you're willing to confront something even when you may be, in fact, afraid, even when you may not be too certain of what the outcome is. And that's why it always goes back to us having faith. If we're going to be courageous and live by conviction, then we have to be willing to have a big heart. I want to look at a couple of examples today of having that big heart, that willingness, and look at the circumstances that surrounded it. We're going to start in Isaiah chapter 6. We're going to read verse 1 through 8. Starting verse 1 there, it says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on the throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six rings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. Woe to me, I cried. I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, see, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And I said, here I am. Send me. Now, a little context here. Isaiah is talking about how, and we need to, you know, remember, Isaiah, he's not new to God. This is not some situation where God found him and this is his first encounter. No, he had been walking with God. But Isaiah says something very important when he says that I am ruined. He says, woe to me. He said, I'm a man of unclean lips. I live among people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. What is he saying here? Is he saying that he needs to brush his teeth? Is he saying that there's something wrong with his speech? No, what he's saying is, I recognize in the face of God that I'm a sinful man, that I myself am not worthy, that by myself I'm not capable of proclaiming who God is to the people. And yet, we see there where it says that the seraphim gave this live coal. He took out of the, you know, altar, and he says with it that he touched his mouth. And he says, your sin has been atoned for. You know, Babylon was in a really bad place at this point. The people he's talking about when he says that I'm unclean and I have unclean lips and I live among people who have unclean lips, he's not saying literally dirty. What he's saying is, these are people who once followed God who have now fallen back into their idol worship. Idol worship to the point that they're following gods. Not only was it not the one true living God that they knew who it was, but they were people who had started following gods that had them killing their children, that had them doing all types of mutilation and weird, just heinous acts and heinous sacrifices. So it wasn't just, oh, well, you know, I'm a little messed up here and we're not in the best place. No, they were in a bad place. The whole community, the whole society, everybody around them, everyone was corrupt. And he says, and I've allowed myself at times to even be corrupt. And yet what we find is that God still wanted to use him. Says, see that this has touched your lips, your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for. And then once it was made clear that his sin was atoned for, said, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And Isaiah made it clear, here I am, send me. You know, I was thinking a lot about what it means to have a big heart, what it means to be willing to be courageous and live as a man or a woman of conviction. And oftentimes it starts with us looking beyond ourselves, understanding the moment is bigger than us. And of course, God knows that the moment is bigger than us, but he atones for our sin. He makes it possible for us to go do the work. It brings him glory when just a regular simple man or a simple woman like one of us is able to go out there and do his work and do his will. Our past sins and our feelings of inadequacy cannot be what prevents us from going out and living by faith and being courageous. Because, see, just like Isaiah in this situation, we can all think of reasons why it is that we can't step up. You know, bottom of the ninth, two outs, you need to run. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to cower back? Are you going to be afraid to step up? Well, I've been thrust into a situation that I'm not ready for. I'm not the man for this. I don't have the qualification that a woman should have to do this thing. He says, your sins are atoned for. See, oftentimes we look at things from the lens of our moral failings. We look at things through the lens of our sin and our inadequacies. Instead of, here I am, send me. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, God, I don't have enough. And God responds with, well, I'll make it enough. But are you willing to go out, be courageous, live by conviction, and do what I ask you to do? You know, I was thinking about what makes someone with a big heart, what makes them courageous? What would make one of us courageous? And oftentimes, it can be summed up in volunteerism. You know, I was even thinking about the deacons as we have acknowledged them, the new ones. You know, being a deacon, you know, that word derives from, you know, what it means to be a servant, someone who's a servant, almost like a waiter, someone who is looking to serve and meet the needs of the people. They're concerned about giving. They're concerned about making sure that other people's needs are met. And oftentimes that comes down to volunteerism because, you know, as Mark can tell you, deacons, it's not a paid position. You know, it's not something where you get a bunch of praise. It's not where you get compensated for it. You have to have the right heart. You have to have the right heart if you're going to live with the courage of your convictions. You have to be willing to volunteer. You have to be willing to serve. It has to be something that you want to see done and not be interested in what's going to come back to you. You know, that's what we see there when we look at the different examples that we've been looking at of people with courage. They're not expecting anything back in return. In fact, they might be respecting something. They might be expecting something harmful or something negative to happen to them. But they're doing it because their heart is in the right place. You have courage because you know it's the right thing to do. You know, I was thinking about, like, you know, I went to school in Tennessee, and it's called a volunteer state, right? You know, you think about what it means to volunteer, and Tennessee, they really take pride in their moniker of being the volunteer state because, you know, they looked at it and said, no, we weren't enlisted, we weren't pulled, we weren't enrolled, we weren't commanded, we volunteered to fight. So many of us, our faith can be summed up in whether or not we're willing to volunteer to fight or if we're going to make excuses. And they may even feel like legitimate excuses. There may even be some really good reasons why you shouldn't, but the fact is you volunteer. And the reason why you need volunteers is because oftentimes it's a dirty job. It's a thankless job. You know, if it were a high-paying, well-recognized, and people are going to give you a pat on the back, well, then you'd have a lot of people that would sign up. They come running, racing up with their resume. You know, it's the dirty jobs that people we need volunteers for. This is one of my favorite shows. I love it because you find, like, he's talking, like, it's like sometimes you can just see it in his face even though he's trying to, you know, he's like, I know I'm on tape. But he's looking at people like, are you kidding me? You know how much this job pays? Do you know how much money you could make doing this? I mean, they're giving you the hazmat suit. They're giving you the gloves. You're not going to get contaminated. But people just don't want to do dirty jobs. You think about what it is that God asks us to do. What he calls us to do. And it's like, how great is it to be able to serve your God? You're being called, you're being asked to do something for the creator of the whole universe. How much better can a job get? But sometimes we just don't want to get dirty. And we find excuses, even when God removes those excuses from us. I want to look at another example. In Exodus chapter 4, one of my favorites. I like this guy. Exodus chapter 4, starting in verse 1, it says, Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground. It became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. Now put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. You know, we see here a situation where if you go back and you look, you think to yourself, Moses, you're actually talking to God. How fascinating is it? You're actually talking to God, and you're like, but God, wait a minute. I know you're God. I know you created the whole universe. I know that I'm the only person that you speak to directly, but you sure you want to do this? I really have a hard time. Maybe they're not going to believe me. And he's like, but wait a minute. Okay, I'm with you with the staff and, you know, the leprosy. That was a cool trick. Now, here's the thing, God. I have a difficult time talking. And then finally he says, I just don't want to do it. Can you please send someone else? He says, no, I'm still going to send you. Now, I'll give you some help. I'll give you all the resources you need. But are you going to be obedient? Are you going to do it? Are you going to do what I'm asking you to do? Oftentimes, the question is not whether we have the capacity and the capability, whether we have the strength, whether we have the resources, whether we know what to do. He says, no, I'm going to teach you what to say as you go along. I'm going to strengthen you. I'm going to give you things as you go along, but it starts with you being willing to go and do the work. See, oftentimes we forget. God already knows. Like, he's telling God, hey, I'm slow of speech. He's like, you do realize I created your mouth. You do realize I know that you are slow of speech. You know, it's like saying, oh, well, I'm not the strongest, or I don't have that much money. You do realize I know how much money is in your account right now. You know, you do realize that I understand that you need certain things. Why wouldn't I provide them for you? See, we can get so caught up in what we don't have and our limitations. We can get caught up on our sinful past and thinking, I don't really have the credibility or the stature to do such a thing. Instead of saying, but you know what? I'm asking you to do it. And if God is asking you to do it, then clearly he believes you're capable. Clearly this is what he wants. We have to ask ourselves, are we actually willing to do the work? Do we actually have the courage? Because where does that courage come from? It should come from knowing that God is actually sending you. You know, again, you look at Moses like, Moses, you're actually having a conversation with him. He's talking to you. He's not talking to everybody else. He's not giving these signs to everybody else. He's not empowering everybody else. He's empowering you. He's asking you. He wants you to do it. And yes, it may be a dirty job. Part of Moses' frustration, he had a little bit of a temper, a little bit of an anger problem. And Moses found it difficult to deal with people because they didn't always respect him. They didn't always look at him very favorably. They didn't always want to listen to him. They were pretty hard-headed. They were going through a pretty rough patch. We looked at that a couple weeks ago. But the fact is, Moses had to be able to look beyond himself, because that's what it means to have a heart. That's what it means to have the courage of your convictions, that you look beyond yourself. You say to yourself, I'm in this moment, I'm in this season, I'm in this place. I have this relationship with this person because God wants me there. And instead of looking for the reasons why not me, we should look at, well, you know what? Doesn't matter all the why nots, all the how nots, all the limitations, because God has me here. He clearly knows that even though the moment is too big for me as a man or a woman in my flesh, it's not too big for him. And if he's going to be the one who gets the glory, if he is the reason why we do what we do, then we should go in full faith and confidence, knowing that God already is completely aware of our flaws. Do we react this way to situations that require us to be bold and be courageous? Do we respond with, God already knows the situation? Not only does he know the situation, he's been preparing me for this. He's been prepping me for this. See, Moses had been prepared for years, even in his sin, even in his wrongdoing. God was using those things to give him the tools and give him the insight. But it took Moses to take the first step and say, I'll do it. Just like Isaiah, he said, here I am, send me. Do we approach situations? Do we approach that relationship with that family member, that loved one, that coworker, that neighbor, that somebody, and say, you know what? Here I am, send me. I know who Jesus is. I know what he did for me on the cross. I know the message of the gospel. And I know this person. I have a relationship with these people. Here I am, send me. You know, we were talking about this, how, you know, it was interesting. You think about the Samaritan woman. When Jesus tells her, you know, her whole life story, as she said, and what does she do? She didn't run out and hand out a bunch of pamphlets. She didn't go door knocking. She didn't, you know, get online and post a bunch of things on social media. No, she went back to her family. She went back to her community. She went back home. And she said, come see a man who told me everything I've ever done. Sometimes, and we've talked about this in the past, the courage, the boldness we need to have when confronted with what God's will is to talk to those people who we already know. It's to talk to those people who are loved ones, who are friends, where there's something on the line, because there's a reason why we're in that family. There's a reason why we have that job. There's a reason why God wanted Moses and he didn't go get Aaron himself. That would later be seen, because Aaron wasn't exactly the most faithful. There was a reason, and it wasn't his speech. See, Moses was so caught up on his credibility and his speech that he didn't realize it's your faith that's going to lead the people, not your tools, not your height, not your stature. It's not your credibility that the people need, it's mine. That's why you're going to go out and perform these signs, because those signs are going to give credibility that says, I sent you. So often we think, well, what do I have to bring to the table? What do I offer to this relationship or this situation? And God's like, no, you are not important in that way. I'm going to give you that credibility that comes from me, that comes from your faith. Are we willing to do what we're asked to do? Are we willing to do those dirty jobs? Are we willing to volunteer and say, God, send me? And so, there's a quote here I want to leave us with. It says, many of the great achievements of the world were accomplished by tired and discouraged people who kept on working. Sometimes we can get discouraged and we can feel tired. We can feel fatigued. We can feel like this is taking me nowhere. Isaiah went through that. He preached to a stubborn, as we talked about, stiff-necked people. He preached to a people who did not listen. But it wasn't the outcome that mattered nearly as much as it was his faith and his obedience and his courage and his willingness to do what God asked him to do. You know, Moses, he grew tired. He grew weary. It was hard work leading God's people who were so beat down and oppressed after being in captivity in Egypt for all those years. It was hard work. It was the ultimate dirty job. But those great accomplishments, the greatness that we all want to be a part of and take part in, it isn't found in us. It's found in our willingness to serve our God. But are we willing to do it? A few questions I want to leave us with. Is my faith limited to my poor self-image? Do I remember and understand that God wants to use me in spite of my sins? This is so important that we really meditate on this, that we think about this, because so often we're looking at ourselves and God's like, I've already sized you up. You know, that's that old saying you say, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, the size of the fight in the dog. God doesn't care about your height, your size, your money, your weight. He cares about your faith. He cares about your courage. He cares that you're willing to be obedient and serve him only. In what areas or relationships have I allowed self-doubt to keep me from being the perfect vessel for God to use to effect change? You know, I put perfect in quotes there because oftentimes we wait and we feel like, well, you know what? I need to wait until I'm the perfect vessel. I need to wait until I know more. I need to wait until I clean up my life some more. I need to wait until I am just right. And God's like, well, here's two things. One, you're never going to be just right. You're never going to be perfect. So you literally be sitting on the sideline waiting. But number two, as we saw with those hot coals where he says, now I've atoned for your sin. We have to remember that God's grace is sufficient and that since we'll never be perfect, we can't wait. Every opportunity doesn't just keep showing up. God's not just going to keep waiting for us, especially after he's revealed himself to us in so many amazing ways. At some point, you just have to step out there and say, God's grace is sufficient, and I know that while I'm not perfect, I am perfect for this situation because God sent me. Is that the attitude we have, or do we fall back into self-doubt about who we are? Do I measure my worthiness by my accomplishments and righteousness, or by God's glory? Is his glory and love what keeps me motivated, or is it based in fear of failure? You know, Moses was afraid that he would fail. He saw himself. He knew who he was. He knew that he was flawed. He knew that he didn't have everything. And so he was like, this is a situation where I'm destined to fail. God, are you sure? He doubted God, even though God is talking to him directly. Do we measure our worthiness based on God getting his glory? Or do we measure it based on what we consider to be failure or achievement? You know, I put there, we're going to look at that next week, 1 John chapter 4, one of my favorite passages where he talks about perfect love drives out fear. You know, we're not to be driven by fear of failure, fear of inadequacy, but it's Christ's love for us and willingness to go to the cross, willingness to give us hope and give us access to God, give us that relationship. That love is what should motivate us, not fear of failure. And finally, what does the ideal messenger of God look like? Should I be looking for it in the Bible? Or is it possible that I can find it in the mirror? So often we look at examples of people like Isaiah and Moses, and you know, we can look in that passage where it talks about those different people, those men and women of faith, and we can forget that the perfect vessel, the ideal messenger, is not based on that perfect you know, set of credentials or that person's stature. The ideal messenger is who God sends, because he knows why he's sending you and why he's not sending somebody else. He knows why he was sending Moses. He knows why he was sending Isaiah. Each of those prophets, when they were sent to different places, he knows the exact time and the exact place that he wanted them to be and when he wanted them to carry that message, that proclamation. Oftentimes we look in the mirror and we see our imperfections and we forget, no, God has decided you're the perfect vessel for this situation. Not for every situation, but the situation you're in, I'm sending you there. I'm putting these people in your way. You're like, man, sometimes we go through that where it's like, man, I just feel like everybody is just getting on my nerves, and why am I so frustrated with my coworkers? We were praying about this a couple weeks ago. You know, seemed like everybody came in that night on Wednesday, and everybody was like, pray for my job, my coworkers, and me, and pray that I don't get in a fight at work. And it's like, look, the reason why you're fighting, because you're in that situation. You're the perfect vessel. The fight was there for you. The hardship is there, and you're in the middle of it because you're the perfect vessel for that situation. You're the perfect person to minister to that person. You're the perfect person to introduce what it means, as the disciples said, teach us how to pray. You're the perfect person to introduce prayer to that person or those people. You're the perfect vessel. You're the ideal person in the ideal situation. But we have to let go of excuses. We have to stop looking at the Bible and saying, well, Moses was perfect for this, and this person was perfect for that. Or even looking around here in this room and thinking, well, Tony's perfect for this, and you know, Sharice is perfect for that. Well, no, there's something that you're the ideal vessel for God to use, but you got to be willing to be that vessel. Maybe part of being the ideal vessel is, you know, that saying, here I am, send me. Maybe this is where you need to be. Maybe you've never accepted Christ. Maybe you've never decided that I'm going to follow God wherever he sends me, that I'm willing to go. If you've never made that commitment, if this is not where you are and you say, I want my sins atoned for, I want to accept that grace that God has given so freely, this is the time to do it. Don't walk away from here today uncertain and unsure and say, well, I got another chance or another opportunity or another time that I can accept Christ in my life. Today is your day. If that's the situation you're in, then when we stand and sing our song of invitation here in a few minutes, please come forward. Maybe you're in a place where, kind of like Isaiah, you know that you haven't been as clean as you need to be. And you need to repent. You need to draw closer to God. You know, the prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. We're here to pray for you. We're here to help you get back on track in your relationship with God. I encourage you to come forward if that's where you are. But all of us are the ideal vessel to do God's work for something. Are we willing to have the courage to do just that? If you're in need of prayer, if you're in need of a life that is certain to be with Christ, we ask that you stand and come forward as we sing our song of invitation.